I am Planta on the line. This is thecommentary.ca. Stephen Hunt is back. He is an arts reporter for the Calgary Herald and the author of a great book, The White Guy. He is a movie fan, among other things. We'll talk about the Oscars as well as the Olympics. His Blade Runner blog on the Herald's website is a regular read of mine. And the website for more is stephenbhunt.com. Please welcome back to the Planta Online program, Stephen Hunt. Good morning, Mr. Hunt.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Pretty good. Yourself?
Fine, thank you.
Are you watching the Olympics at all?
I have been watching the Olympics all the time.
Yeah.
Last night was a spectacular little moment for Canada, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Now, I'm not a hockey fan, and you're probably a bigger hockey fan than I am. The Canadians were not favored to win that against the Russians, were they?
I think people were pretty nervous about that game, but I mean, Canada has so much talent, it just seems like once they cleared their heads and started firing pucks, they were going to do okay, and boy, did they ever stomp all over Russia last night. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, and who are they facing now, Canada?
They face Slovakia, because the Slovakia, who are a low-profile country, but have a lot of good NHL-type players, a lot of those Marios in the NHL, like Hossa and Marion Gaborik and stuff, play for them. They're going to play them in the semis, and then if the Americans can beat Finland, they will rematch again on Sunday night, which will be a huge shot at redemption.
Yeah. Your wife's American. What's it like to watch the Olympics at your house?
Well, my son is born in America, but, you know, spent most of his life in Canada, so he's completely on the Canadian gravy train, and I'm showing my nationalistic feathers. And of course America is far ahead of everybody in terms of medals, and my wife just takes it so in stride because she's from America, so it's almost like not only does she get to kick our butt, but she gets to be completely indifferent to the whole thing. So it's kind of tough, to bitter pill to swallow. That's why I want to see Canada take the boots to them in the hockey game on Sunday night.
Yeah. Now, you're a Canadian, but you're pretty cosmopolitan. You got street cred because you were once an illegal alien in the U.S.
That's true.
What do you think this all means to Canada and Canadians? I mean, there was a piece in the National Post a couple days ago by Stephen Marsh about how this would be as nation-defining as Expo 67. Do you think that's the case?
I was pretty skeptical at the start. I thought the whole thing was a pretty much of a boondoggle, but it has been an unbelievable little 2 weeks. I think it has been. It's been magnificent. I don't know in the long run. I mean, as far as how nation building or defining it's going to be. I mean, I think the whole world knows Canada's a little better than Canadians ever think that we are. So I think going out there night after night and doing very well in front of the eyes of the world is probably not a bad thing.
Yeah. Let's move to late night. Were you following this Conan Leno Letterman deal?
Oh, yeah. Of course.
What did you make of the ad that Leno and Letterman made with Oprah?
I saw that.
It was a Super Bowl ad, right?
Well, I guess. Yeah, it was. I mean, I guess Jay took quite a beating there, you know, and he needed to redeem himself in some way. So Dave and Oprah came to his rescue a bit to make him seem a little more of a okay guy. But I mean, he's really coming across poorly in the whole thing. I mean, the whole thing is a kind of a fiasco by the parent corporation, who just manipulated the situation in a way that really didn't reflect the reality. I mean, Leno was number one by a long shot, and they forced him out of there, and then they panicked, and then they put him on early, and that lost all the lead-in audience to Conan, so Conan got no opportunity to prove whether he could get an audience or not. So, I mean, when I look at it all, I mean, I don't really watch them, because I have a 7-year-old kid, so I'm usually asleep by the time those shows come on, but I'd be more of a Conan guy, but I thought the whole thing was a corporate fiasco. I think corporations make good evil, much better evil villains than lantern-jawed stand-ups.
speaking of late night, did you see the Colbert programs that were taped here in Vancouver?
No, I haven't seen them. I heard he's calling us ice holes, though.
Yeah,
I thought that was hilarious. I mean, he's very funny. the whole story, there was a great story in the paper in the Globe and Mail about Richmond and how Richmond, you know, has attached itself to the Olympic movement, and they put up the money to build the speed skating oval, which is getting raves for its architecture all over the world, and Colbert got into it with the city of Richmond, and all of a sudden they were, it was the whole story of how Colbert ended up financing the speed skating team. So the whole thing was a bonanza for the city of Richmond, and I thought, those are some politicians who know what they're doing.
Yeah. So let's move to the Oscars. That's why you're on. Steve Martin, Alec Baldwin, they're hosting the Oscars, I guess, 2 Sundays from now.
Yeah.
What do you think we can expect with that?
From those two guys?
Yeah.
Well, Alec Baldwin is a bit of a bad boy, you know, with an Irishman's temper, and he's a very funny guy. And Steve Martin is more of a, you know, I guess, has he hosted the Oscars before?
He has twice, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's a comfortable, familiar figure, and he's silly. So, I mean, it's not the most adventurous choice. I don't really get the, you know, I mean, last year Hugh Jackman was an unconventional choice, and turned out I thought it was did a good job. I thought the whole show had a kind of a bounce to it last year that
it
was
did.
A lot of fun, and they embraced the awful musical, you know, Ed Sullivan show quality that the Oscars sometimes has, and they found a way to turn it on its head last year with a musical theater host, and so that seemed to me to be a really good decision, although some people didn't like that, but I thought that worked really well, and then this year, I mean, it's not going to do that. It's going to be more of a reliance on comedy, which is great if it's funny. I'm not going to complain, but I don't dislike either of those guys, so I'm looking forward to seeing them.
Yeah. This year they have this innovation where they have 10 nominees for Best Picture.
Yeah.
What did you make of that?
Well, I guess the whole point of that is to try to get some, because the Oscars have become so dominated by small independent films, like The Hurt Locker, for example. The Hurt Locker has grossed, in its entire run of a year now, has grossed less than Avatar was grossing on a Saturday for about the last 3 months. So it's grossed about $15 million. And when all the nominees are little films like that, the television ratings go down the tubes because people don't have a rooting interest. So they expanded to 10 pictures to try and bring in some bigger pictures that people had been to. And Avatar would have gotten in either way, but Blindside got in, which was a picture that wouldn't normally have been included, and that had a big audience, and people love it. It's a little more on the commercial side than you would expect for Best Picture nominee, and lots of good, and District 9 got in. I don't know if you saw that, but that was a wonderful sci-fi movie, allegory about South African apartheid. It's really good. So basically that was the motivation, and doesn't seem to me to be, you know, doesn't seem to me to be a bad thing to put in 10. I mean, it just makes it that much more interesting.
You had a thing on your blog about The Hangover, and you'd expected it to be nominated for Best Picture, did you?
Well, I don't know if I expected it, because the Oscar tradition is to treat comedy as, you know, treat comedy, successful comedy, as something kind of lesser than a successful drama or a biopic, I mean, or a musical. Oscars always favored those pictures, but The Hangover was a wonderful comedy that was intelligently written and made for $30 million. It's grossed about $400 million around the world. I mean, it just succeeded on every level with no real name actors. It was a beautifully executed project and would have fit that mandate of trying to get more of an audience with the 10 pictures being nominated, and still it got left out. So I took that as an opportunity to bang on my bully pulpit that comedy needs to get more respect at Oscar time.
Have you seen all 10 of these films?
I've seen 7. I have seen Avatar, Up in the Air, Up, An Education, A Serious Man, District 9. I have not seen Blindside, and I have not seen Precious. And there's one. Oh, I haven't seen Inglourious Bastards.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't know what, if for me, it seems like this is, like, I mean, I remember when we talked a year ago about the nominees last year. I mean, you had films like Slumdog Millionaire and Milk, and it seemed like a great year for film. This time around, I don't get the same feeling.
Those were great movies, now that you mention them, it's true. And this year's pictures, A Serious Man is a Coen Brothers movie, and the Coen Brothers always put out a good movie, and I saw it, and it was a very good movie. It's very funny, so there's a little acknowledgement of the comedy there, but that didn't feel like a huge Coen Brothers movie that needed to be in the Best Picture nominees. It just felt like a good small movie, and Education is a similar kind of low-key movie about relationships, and very well made, but not... You know, not epic in scale or reach or anything like that. And The Blind Side is a popular favorite, and Avatar is very popular culture. Although Avatar goes out, sticks its neck out too. It's a good story. I mean, I don't want to diminish the brilliance of Avatar because it's going to gross $3 billion. Up in the Air, I think, is a magnificent movie. I think Up in the Air is kind of like the Tootsie of its day. It's going to be a classic Hollywood. It's kind of a romantic comedy with an unromantic ending, but it's going to last a long time. And Avatar changed the bar for a lot of Hollywood. So, by that measure, District 9 is also really quite a smart piece of movie making. So you can't knock it.
I've seen Up in the Air.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I liked it, but I didn't. I mean, I'm looking at the list of nominees for Best Actor, and it seems to me that Jeff Bridges, this is his time, and the performance is pretty good from what I hear from people who've seen it.
It does, doesn't it? That does seem to be the consensus favorite.
And then I look at then you go to Best Actress, and the front runner there is Sandra Bullock.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seems odd that she'd be the first choice, don't you think? I mean, I like Sandra Bullock, but I mean, I've never thought of her as an Oscar-type actress.
Yeah, I know. She's kind of a popular ingenue who no one has ever given a single award to, I don't think, for many years, and all of a sudden she wasn't the favorite. I guess Meryl Streep was, and Carrie Mulligan from An Education, but Bullock has won a few of the big guild prizes in the last few weeks, so I do have a feeling it's kind of like the year Julia Roberts was nominated for Aaron Brockovich. And it's, you know, the Hollywood does like to reward its loyal, profitable stars, and so I could get it could be the way we see the acting ones go down, both sides. Bridges, you would expect Jeff Bridges to win, and I loved Clooney's performance in Up in the Air. I thought it was just best Clooney job he's done in a long time, and wonderful. Although, you know, he kind of played himself, maybe, but
yeah,
he's great. So I haven't seen Jeff Bridges in Crazy Heart yet, but I love Jeff Bridges too, so I'm okay with that.
Yeah, if I look, I mean, I haven't seen Julia and Julia yet, but I like to think that I've seen enough of it on YouTube and on TV that I think I know what it's about. And I just don't think, I mean, she seems to be number two running against Bullock.
Yes.
I don't think it's as good a performance as Doubt, certainly.
She was unbelievable in Doubt.
Yeah. Even if you think about the other movie that she made a couple years ago that she was nominated for,
Which one?
The what's that movie? The one where she's a magazine editor? Oh, The
Devil Wears Prada.
Yeah.
Well, that's, you know what? She's the greatest. Meryl Streep's the greatest actress ever.
She is, yeah.
So we do tend to devalue her, I think, a little bit, because every single time she does a part, she nails it, and she is just takes your breath away. So, but I didn't see Julie and Julia either. My wife saw it on the airplane one day, and she was laughing a lot. She just thought it was great. So, and she's an actress, and she didn't have anything bad to say about Meryl Streep in that one. So. But it's hard to know. I mean, I think because Meryl Streep, as she grows older, although Doubt was a dramatic role, but she does tend to go a little more towards the comic, which is always, you know, the Academy always likes to give the big, heated, dramatic performances, the Sophie's Choices of the world, the prize, rather than a nice comedic part. Although, you know, there's a lot to be said for knocking it out of the park in a comedy role.
Yeah. You're a Woody Allen fan. Did you like Whatever Works?
I haven't seen it.
The Larry David film, no?
I haven't seen it.
I saw it the other night. And, you know, you watch Larry David, and so you're expecting the sitcom.
Right.
And so whenever you see him on the screen, you want to see the sitcom, and then you realize it's a Woody Allen film, and you're probably only going to get Woody Allen, right?
Well, I love Woody Allen, and I love Larry David, so it sounded like a good thing to me. But then some people were really cutting it up. Did you think it lived up to him, or was you?
I thought it was a little weak. But I liked the film, though. But I thought, overall, I didn't think it was as good a Woody Allen film as, you know... I mean, not as good as, certainly, Vicky Cristina Barcelona.
I really like that.
Yeah, and Larry David is not as good in the movie as he is on his show.
Yeah, that's kind of disappointing two times.
Yeah. You had a great piece the other... a couple weeks ago on your blog about Network.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And... I bring it up because I just loved reading it, and I love the movie.
I love that movie too.
And I did a piece on the website after Christmas about one's favorite journalism or political movies.
Uh-huh.
Would that rank there in terms of journalism for you as the best, perhaps?
I guess that would be a two-horse race, wouldn't it, between All the President's Men and Network.
Yeah.
But it's hard to knock Network. I mean, Network is still relevant, and it's still resonant and funny 35 years after it was written, so you'd have to... I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah, and all the President's Men sort of lost it now that we know who Deep Throat is, right?
A little bit. It lost a bit of its tingle.
Yeah. State of Play. I have that written in my notes here.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That was a great movie, and I'm surprised that it didn't even make the top 10 or whatever you call it.
I thought it was a terrific movie, and people were complaining about it when it came out, and I really love Russell Crowe. I mean, for my money, Russell Crowe is about the best actor out there, and he gets in trouble because he throws phones at hotel clerks' heads and things.
Yeah.
And he's just Australian, and he just seemed to be the guy that everybody likes to hate, but... That was a great, great piece of movie making. Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah. You're in Calgary this morning.
Yes, I am.
What do we need to know about Danielle Smith? I mean, that's a name that we hear a lot.
The charismatic leader of the Wild Rose Party, who may be the next provincial premier.
I mean, that's a possibility, of course, but I mean, is that, I mean, what do you think? I mean,
well, you know, it does line up a certain way with the history of Alberta, since Alberta just seems to go 35 years at a time with its existing power and party in power, and then it kicks them out for something completely unexpectedly and over towards the right of where no one thought they'd ever get, and that seems to be where they're positioned. And there just seems to be a lot of agita towards the conservatives, and Ed Stelmach, I mean, Ed Stelmach's very middle-of-the-ground premier. I mean, he's sort of reasonable, but he did alienate the oil and gas industry with his new royalties, which, you know, sometimes you read stories about Norway, and they're like, well, Alberta doesn't have a clue, and they could really do more with royalties, so Ed Stelmach just took little baby steps, but everybody flew off the handle, and then it coincided with the economic crash, so the oil and gas producers, and I mean, the natural gas producers, there's all the big oil corporations and the oil sands here, but then there's lots of little natural gas producers who work on a much finer margin, and they get really outraged. And they're kind of old-school Albertans, and they've all gone over to the Wild Rose because the Wild Rose kind of got in bed with the natural gas guys. So they've got a huge lead right now, and I think that Danielle Smith, you know, she's been vague. She's kind of a charismatic person. She's kind of a climate change denier in a huge way, which doesn't really cost her very much political capital in Alberta, let me tell you. So, I think you'll hear more about her as we get closer to another provincial election.
Steve, I appreciate this, and I hope it's not a year before we talk again.
Me too.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Joe.
Mr. Hunt's own website is stephenbhunt.com. The Blade Runner blog can be found at the Calgary Herald's website. Stephen Hunt on the line from Calgary in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.